Hello, you're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Today, the reality of stroke.
So it's an attack on the brain. It's absolutely sudden, often without any warning or indicator to the individual affected, and it absolutely changed lives immediately.
Action.
Well, I'm Luke Webb, and I can be from anywhere you want me to be.
If you need me to be on a sunny beach in California, I can be there.
Scotland.
Times Square, New York. I can even be in country outback New South Wales.
England.
Please, sir, can I have some more?
I'm 19, I'm from Sydney, and I'm an actor. I don't see myself doing anything else with my life. I just want to act.
Things were going quite well, actually. I'd left film school over in the States, and I'd got a lead role in a feature film here, which did quite well. And then after that, quite a few things followed. Some amazing little short films. One that actually screened at the Cannes Film Festival. It was called Inferno. It's a convict thriller, period piece. It was really great. A ton of auditions. Things were really on the up, and I was really looking forward to what was to come.
But little did Luke Webb realise, what was soon to come was the last thing he expected.
I was at my local RSL one night. I was with some mates, just, you know, put a few dollars in the pokies. And I just felt really funny, really. Best way to describe it is I felt like my head was really smoky. And I always joke and tell people I took it as a sign above to say, go home, don't gamble anymore. So, and I did. I was going to go home, just going to go to bed. And I thought, no, you know what? I think maybe I should just go to the hospital and check things out because of the problems I'd had a few weeks earlier. And I did, and my mum took me down there, and I said, no, don't stay around, don't worry. When I was in the hospital about 2 hours, they looked me over, and it was then when my speech started to go, the right side of my face started to go, and my right arm as well. And I had a really young doctor, and he looked me over, and he said, I think you're having a stroke, so we're going to send you to a bigger hospital. And I remember clearly I looked at him and I kind of laughed, and I think I said something like, oh, where did you get your medical degree? A stroke. Because he was quite young, only about as young as me. And I said, a stroke? I can't be having a stroke. I'm too young. And then I was rushed in an ambulance to Westmead Hospital. They took me in, and it showed that I had had a clot. But I was very, very lucky. From the MRI, they could tell I had had a clot, but it had flushed itself out. So I was quite lucky. I remember before and after, but I don't remember a lot of in between. It was real hazy. And then I remember waking up that afternoon in a rickety old 40-year-old bed in a geriatrics ward. And I couldn't move my right side. I couldn't move my leg, my arm. My tongue was hanging out of my mouth. I was a bit like Daffy Duck. And that's really all I remember. I don't remember a lot of in between of what happened.
So you were in a geriatric ward, so everyone else there were elderly.
They were. I had a woman in front of me who couldn't talk, she couldn't move. Another man opposite me, he was just screaming and something, no mental capability. And the woman next to me kept secreting herself in the bed. So I kind of woke up and I was like, wow, why am I here? Where am I?
Luke Webb was 20 when he had a stroke. The only thing that may have put him at risk for stroke was that he'd recently had deep vein thrombosis after doing a lot of air travel. So what exactly is a stroke? Sharon McGowan is the CEO of the Stroke Foundation.
Well, that's the really interesting thing, Lynn, is that a lot of people actually don't know what a stroke is. And a stroke, in its very simplest form, is an attack on the brain. So a stroke affects your brain and it cuts off the blood supply to the brain. And that can either be from a burst blood vessel in your head, or it can be from a blocked blood vessel in your head. So there are two types of stroke. A blocked blood vessel is the majority, it's about 80% of strokes, and a burst blood vessel is the other 20%.
And what's known about the causes?
Well, the causes are multifactorial, as a number of things are. Essentially, the same risk factors that affect many of our chronic diseases today are actually the causes of stroke. So smoking would be a real cause of stroke. It's a lack of physical exercise, it's poor diets, it's obesity, diabetes. All of those conditions actually impact and increase your risk of stroke. There are two particular risk factors that are really relevant to stroke. One is high blood pressure, and that's a real, what we call a silent killer. A lot of people are walking around in Australia with high blood pressure and have no idea that they have it. So one of the things that we do as a Stroke Foundation is that we run Australia's biggest blood pressure check every year. And this year, during April, we conducted 56,000 blood pressure checks, and about a quarter of those checked were actually found an increased risk of stroke because they had high blood pressure, and many of them didn't know it. So having high blood pressure really increases your risk of stroke significantly, 5 times the increased risk.
Sharon McGowan. Dr. Caleb Ferguson is an ambassador for the Stroke Foundation.
The Stroke Foundation sort of statistics that are startling to me is that stroke impacts 1 in every 6 people. It kills more women than breast cancer and more men than prostate cancer. And that 1/3 of stroke survivors are under the age of 65. So these individuals are of working age. It is really an older person's disease, but also does affect younger people as well. And that 2/3 of individuals that survive stroke will be left with some sort of cognitive or functional disability that they will need some support to live as an independent life as possible.
Caleb Ferguson is a Chancellor's Postdoc Research Fellow at the University of Technology, Sydney. Here's Sharon McGowan again.
I think one of the most the scariest parts of stroke is that across the community, it just isn't really talked about. And that can be for a number of reasons. I think just general, the community is not as aware of stroke as it might be for some of the other chronic diseases. And that's something that we're really dedicated to raising awareness of stroke. This is a very treatable condition if people can get to hospital fast and get that treatment. So recognizing the signs of a stroke is really important. And just because a person's young doesn't mean that they wouldn't be at risk of stroke. So if you think somebody has had a stroke, the first thing that you have to do is call 000. So we have a message that we use and we promote all the time, and that's the FAST message. So the classic signs of a stroke are face drooping, that's F, arms. So if you ask somebody to raise their arms and it's not balanced, so one of their arms doesn't raise as much as the other, there's any kind of an imbalance, that's the arm test. The speech test, do they have slurred speech? If they have 1, 2, or 3 of those symptoms, it's time to call an ambulance. So FAST is the message that we want to get out to the community. And just because somebody is young doesn't mean that they're not at risk at stroke.
And the timeliness of this is very important because it's related to one of the key treatments that's available, isn't it?
You're absolutely right, Lynn. This is so important, a message to get across. And that's why calling an ambulance is always the first thing that you do when you have a stroke. Every stroke is a medical emergency. It's a really good message to get out to the community because optimally we need to treat stroke within 4.5 hours.
Sharon McGowan. There are 2 types of stroke. The more common is called an ischemic stroke, which is caused by a blocked blood vessel or clot. And the other is hemorrhagic. This is when a blood vessel bursts in the brain. Stroke treatment has improved considerably over the last decade or so, partly due to the development of dedicated multidisciplinary stroke units. The treatment referred to by Sharon McGowan earlier, which needs to be applied quickly, is called thrombolysis. Dr. Caleb Ferguson explains.
This is a therapy that's an anticoagulant drug, so a blood thinning therapy. It's given through an infusion into a patient's vein, and it's given as a bolus or an immediate injection, but then as an infusion thereafter for a set amount of time. And that will thin the blood with an aim or an objective really to dissolve that clot that exists in ischemic stroke. I guess something that's been around as well for quite a number of years, probably a decade. I've worked in stroke for over a decade now, and we've definitely had thrombolysis around for a long time during my period of work. And it used to only be available at centres between the hours of 9 to 5 and only be given to patients that could arrive at hospital between those hours. Now this therapy is given 24 hours a day, and it's important to note that not every patient is eligible for this therapy. And I guess one of the barriers to patients accessing this therapy is that they have to present and receive the drug within 4.5 hours of onset of signs and symptoms and receive that therapy when they're in hospital. So I guess that this creates quite a barrier for patients being eligible for that therapy, and recognising that they're having a stroke or a family member recognising that, and getting urgent medical attention and getting into a centre that provides thrombolysis. So I guess our rates of thrombolysis as a nation within Australia, in the last Stroke Foundation audit, only 7% of patients received that therapy. And that rate of 7% has not changed in the last 5 years. And to me, that's quite concerning. We know that this therapy improves patient outcome, yet our uptake is only 7%. And that doesn't seem to really have budged in the last 5 years. So that's quite concerning. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done in terms of public awareness raising, in terms of getting help fast for a stroke and recognising those signs and symptoms of stroke to be then eligible and to optimise their eligibility for that therapy. One of the new novel therapies that's available as well is clot retrieval or embolectomy for stroke. And this is quite an exciting therapy that's available only in select centres, primarily at the moment within metropolitan areas in the major cities within Australia. Just to explain a little bit about what embolectomy or clot retrieval is. So it's quite similar to what we would do at the moment for a heart attack in terms of retrieving a clot through an artery. This is a procedure whereby patients would undergo an invasive procedure where they would have a sheath inserted, usually in the groin, in the artery there. And this sheath is fed up into the artery within the brain. And it's almost like a corkscrew type device that the interventional neuroradiologist can retrieve that clot and pull that out that way. So it's very exciting, and that shows a lot of promise to improve patient outcome. Again, that's not something that can be done for every stroke patient. There's a strict set of eligibility criteria for that as well. And I guess that at the moment, the uptake is probably quite slow. But I guess it's also around about developing health systems that can adequately provide this therapy 24 hours a day and rapidly for patients that have acute ischemic stroke.
Caleb Ferguson from UTS. Luke Webb was 20 when he had his stroke. But he was lucky because after a couple of days in hospital, the clot in his brain had flushed itself out, so he didn't need the clot-busting thrombolysis treatment. But the effects of his stroke were very evident.
Look, my whole right side went. Probably about the Tuesday, my face came back. The first thing to come back was my face and my speech. That kind of came back just quite soon, and then my arm came back in a few days as well, but my leg was the dead weight. We just couldn't get it going. And they wanted to send me home, and I knew I couldn't cope. And I said, no, I said, I can't. I said, I've got stairs at home. I can't get around like this. So I stayed there for about a week in the hospital and worked with a physio until they thought, well, we're going to send you home now. So working with a physio every day in the hospital, going up and down the wards, up the little steps they have. But even then when they sent me home, I was on a walking stick. I couldn't walk. It was like dragging my leg behind me.
So you had rehabilitation for quite a period after that?
I was really lucky, and sometimes I see it like perhaps they saw me as young and saw I was going to recover with work. So I was really lucky. I got out of hospital rehab and physiotherapy, which many stroke patients don't get, especially the older ones. Just going back to saying about one of the other people that were in the ward when I woke up, I remember a few days later his family come in, and it actually turned out he was about 55, and they said to him, you've had a stroke, we can't look after you, we're going to have to send you to a home and sell the house. So I was quite lucky that I got that out of hospital rehab. So it was twice a week for about a good 8 or 12 weeks rehab in the public health system.
And did you have any cognitive impacts?
Yeah, my mind is still really fuzzy. And even to this day, that's probably one of the only things that I've been left with, is that my memory sometimes isn't what it used to be. And sometimes when I do these interviews, I get a little bit nervous because I can't find the words I'm looking for. So, you know, I'll be talking to someone and I'll know the word I'm looking for, but I just can't pull it out. So I'll start going, what's the word I'm looking for? And, you know, with my career, what I want to do, you know, I could learn a scene in about 20 minutes and now it takes me about a day because, you know, my memory's been affected like that. But I still pinch myself and say I'm one of the lucky ones, because I've heard stories and I've met people who have been so worse off than me.
Do you feel like, though, that memory is gradually improving? Do you have hope that
it did. You know, it was 2 years, 3 years last week. So, and it has improved in that time. But, you know, I've been told it's probably not going to be what it used to be, but it's not that bad, honestly. But, you know, I was had an amazing memory before. I could remember things from when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and now that's not the case. But it has improved over time with work, because I do so much more reading now, and I try really work my mind as much as I can. Sometimes I overdo it. But personally, I don't think it's ever going to be what it used to be. And sometimes I still do get fuzzy. I get very tired sometimes. And I didn't get like that before. So that's probably one of the things I've been left with.
Luke Webb. You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynne Malcolm. Today we're discussing stroke, which happens when the supply of blood to the brain is suddenly interrupted. Some strokes are fatal, while others cause permanent or temporary disability. Sharon McGowan is the CEO of the Stroke Foundation. She explains the range of outcomes.
Well, it can completely vary depending on the type of stroke that that person has had, how quickly they've had access to treatment, how intensive their rehabilitation. I think what a common message that we hear from our stroke survivors is often what they feel is that they've fallen into a black hole when they're discharged into the community. So we have stroke survivors who are actually in hospital and they're getting sort of 24-hour care. They're getting lots of attention from multidisciplinary teams. Our hospital staff do an incredible job. And it's often once they get back into the community that that's where they feel really alone. And that's something that the Stroke Foundation is absolutely dedicated to changing. So we have a consumer-related website. So it's dedicated to stroke survivors, provides lots of information about services that are available in the community to stroke survivors. We also provide a telephone follow-up service for our stroke survivors in Queensland, and we're just beginning a pilot of that same service in Victoria and New South Wales. So that's something that we've identified as a gap. We need to make sure that once people are discharged from hospital, that they're getting connected in with the right community support services so that they can make their best recovery possible. And I think particularly for stroke survivors, one of the things that we want to draw more attention to is that incidence of depression amongst stroke survivors. And that's particularly for younger stroke survivors who feel completely lost when they've had a diagnosis of a stroke. Because you can imagine, anybody who does think about a stroke often thinks it's something that happens to your grandmother or your grandfather. It's somebody much older. So it can be a really, really shocking diagnosis to have. And a number of our stroke survivors, up to 30%, will suffer from depression. So making sure that people have appropriate counselling, that they have access to counselling services, that they're getting treated and supported through any aspect of depression is really important. So what we want to say is there are support services out there for you. We want to do our best to connect you to them. But this is an area that I think as a community, we really need to make sure that those stroke survivors who often have a lifetime of some form of disability ahead of them, that they're getting access to all the kind of services they need.
So the disabilities can range from quite extreme physical disability to, I guess, even mild cognitive disability.
Yes. So one of our stroke survivors, Brenda, who's a fantastic ambassador for us, would say that one of the things that she found was her ability to do maths was completely different after her stroke. And she thought, oh, this is completely strange and unique to me. And it was only when she went on to our Enable Me website that she realised there are a number of other stroke consumers and stroke survivors out there that have actually had the same type of impairment afterwards. So they've struggled with maths as a result of their stroke. Now, again, lots of people can make those kind of recoveries by doing appropriate sort of rehabilitation around a particular deficit or weakness. But that's one of the real benefits of that support network, that stroke survivors start talking to other stroke survivors. And it's about letting people know that they're not alone, that often the symptoms and the signs and the stresses and the challenges that they're faced by many other stroke survivors. There's over 440,000 people living with stroke in Australia. So that's a big community. So there's lots of people out there that can actually have the same sort of experience as you that can be there to actually help you through that process.
So what are some of the potential treatments and rehabilitation that people can go through to really bring them back to good health after a stroke?
Well, I think it's varied. Everybody's stroke experience is unique to them, and the type of disability or impairment that they would have will be unique to them as well. So often people have a multidisciplinary team approach. So some people will need access to regular physiotherapy. Some people will need access to a dietitian if they've had difficulty swallowing, because that is, again, one, particularly for people that have had significant strokes, they have difficulty swallowing. That can obviously affect their long-term health in terms of their nutrition. A lot of people have difficulty with balance. So again, that could be through a physiotherapist that would actually be helpful to them. Speech pathology, again, I think a particularly frustrating disability related to stroke is people lose the power of speech. So actually having access to a regular speech pathology can enable people to get some speech back in the longer term. But obviously, a number of people with a really severe stroke could actually end up being in a wheelchair and having paralysis down one complete side of their body. And that means that they will need long-term care and support. We often say that stroke actually doesn't happen just to an individual. It happens to their entire family and their support network at home, because some people are left with significant disability. In fact, stroke is the largest cause of adult disability in Australia. And again, that's a fact that people don't really know about much about. So it's the third biggest killer and the largest cause of adult-related disability in this country. So it is a very big problem to solve, but it's absolutely something that we can solve. We have some of the brightest minds in stroke in Australia, both in research and in clinical care. And we have some really fantastic people, both in the acute stroke area, but also in the rehabilitation space, that are really dedicated to making it better in the long term for our Australian community.
Sharon McGowan. Caleb Ferguson from UTS is an ambassador for the Stroke Foundation, and he's working hard to improve the care and services available for stroke survivors.
A lot of focus has been put on in terms of improving stroke care within the hospital setting and improving systems in stroke units and the care that's delivered in stroke units. To date, there's been sort of limited focus and attention on the care that patients receive after they leave that hospital door, if you like. This is a time whereby patients are hugely vulnerable, are in that phase of coping and adjusting with living with disability or cognitive and functional disability. So 2/3 of stroke survivors will be left with some sort of cognitive or functional impairment that they will need some sort of assistance to live as an independent life as possible once they leave the hospital door. There's been limited sort of research capacity in that area, and also limited funding, but also limited services for patients once they leave the hospital door. So at the moment, there isn't a comprehensive national program that supports stroke survivors once they've left the hospital door. The Stroke Foundation have a program at the moment which they're trialling in Queensland that's received some state funding, which is called Stroke Connect. And this is primarily a telephone service that provides a check-in, if you like, with the stroke survivor and their caregiver after they leave the hospital door. And that acts as a referral service as well into other multidisciplinary health professionals. And that's an evidence-based approach that will improve outcome in patients in the long term. Something else that I think is a huge unmet need in stroke survivors once they transition home is having that psychological support. So we know that anxiety and depression is hugely prevalent after an individual has their stroke event. And it's really important that there's adequate services that meet the needs of these individuals. A lot of stroke survivors often feel that the services that are available are not tailored to meet their needs, but also are not of a sufficient quality for them as well, or that they just don't know that these services are available for them, or if there's a cost attached to those services as well.
Dr. Caleb Ferguson, postdoc research fellow at UTS. Luke Webb certainly experienced depression after he had his stroke at the age of 20. You mentioned that you've noticed a little bit of a cognitive change in yourself. How else do you think you've changed?
Oh, look, it's definitely made me stronger as a person, because nothing will ever get me down again. And it made me appreciate life more. I must say I grew up so much. I like to think I was quite mature. When I was 17, I moved to LA and went to film school, so I was quite mature at the time. But I grew up quite a bit, and it just, yeah, made me a real stronger person. And, you know, something I didn't talk about only until recently was that the depression and the mental health issues that I had afterwards. And I think a lot of that also made me a stronger person.
So tell me a bit more about that depression you went through.
I woke up that day in the hospital and I thought, why me, why me? And there was a lady in there and she was visiting someone. I was telling her about what happened and she said to me, you know what, you will get through it. And do you know why? And I said, oh, why is that? And she said, because you've got a beautiful smile and you're determined. And it was after that I thought, you know what, just down the road there are children that aren't going to walk out of that hospital. They're not going to even come out of there feeling the sun on their face. And I thought, I am. And it was that moment when I stopped feeling sorry for myself that I thought, okay, I'm going to get through this. But as the months followed on, the depression, you know, it really took a toll on me. You know, I'd walk through shopping centres with a walking stick and I'd see people looking at me and I think, what are they thinking? They're probably thinking, why is he like that? And I just couldn't do the normal things I used to do. I couldn't do the things my friends did. But the problem was I didn't seek help. I was too proud to ask for help. And it got to a point in the end where I just didn't want to live anymore. I didn't want to go on. And it was only a few months ago that one of our other advocates, who's become a really good friend of mine, I was telling her about the night that I just took a handful of pills and I just wanted to go to sleep and never wake up. And she then told me about how the person very close to her who'd had a stroke said to her one day, look, I want you to help me end my life. And I thought, wow, I thought it's not just me. And I thought, I've got to stop being embarrassed to talk about this. And yeah, it was, I just didn't want to be here anymore. And then it got to a point where I had to do something about it. And it wasn't until recently that I actually went, you know, and got professional help and started speaking to a psychologist about my problems. And I think that's something else that needs to be addressed with stroke is the mental health problems that come with it and the demons people face. Because it's not just physical incapabilities that come with it. So many people suffer with depression after stroke and it's not talked about. And as I said, I was too proud to ask for help. And I know it's so cynical to say, but I was too embarrassed. To me, it was, you know, men don't talk about this. Be a man and just get through it. And yeah, if I just opened my mouth and spoke to someone and said, hey, I'm not coping, it wouldn't have got as bad as it did.
So what is the key message that you want to get across about stroke, drawing on your experience?
Stroke doesn't discriminate. Whether you're 6 months old, whether you're 60 years old, go and get your blood pressure checked. And if it does happen to you, just fight it, you'll get through it. There's a new day ahead and the grass is greener on the other side. It hasn't been mowed in a year and you're going to have to do a lot of hard work, but you'll get through it. And keep smiling.
Luke Webb. And if you'd like more information about stroke and the coming National Stroke Week, head to the All in the Mind website for details. Thanks to producer Diane Dean and sound engineer Joe Wallace. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Catch you next time.
Discover the best of RN on Facebook. Simply search for ABC RN.